Today, we're shining a spotlight on a crucial aspect of the beauty and personal care industry, the pursuit of zero waste beauty. I literally jumped at the chance to speak to today's guest, Dr. Olivia Ahn, one of the co-founders of Floos. She's a trailblazer, and this conversation really opened my eyes to how much innovation is really needed to see our sustainability goals achieved.
By the fact that there are unflushables going down the waterways, I want to ensure that not only are we providing a more sustainable period solutions, but we're also able to prevent plastic from going into our food. So that was something that was absolutely critical for me. So in order to do that, we've had to change not just the materials, but the entire manufacturing process as well.
So in our quest for eco-friendly living, one often overlooks areas feminine hygiene. And did you know that globally, it's estimated that over 45 billion menstrual products are disposed of every year? That is an astronomical amount of waste, with traditional products contributing significantly to landfills. Look at the statistics from various corners of the world. The magnitude of the issue becomes much clearer. A staggering environmental toll that demands our attention. But it's not just about the problem. It's also about the solution. And I think more often than not, when we have these conversations, we talk a lot about the problem, but nobody's talking about ways to solve it effectively. And nobody's solving the problem. It's getting better. And over the past 5 years of me doing this, I've seen a significant change. So my outlook is positive. So today we're really talking about the pressing need for truly biodegradable options in feminine hygiene. We'll unpack why the status quo is no longer acceptable and how we shift towards sustainable zero waste alternatives is not just a choice, but a responsibility. The time has come for this conversation, and it goes way beyond just our beauty routines and touches on the global impact of our choices. So many of you know that I am a huge advocate for zero or low waste period products. And there has been a huge shift in the UK, especially in recent years, with brands like Modi Body, Day, who are a personal fave, Organic Mondays and Hey Girls growing in popularity. These brands are paving the way for an alternative way to navigate your periods. And with that being said, I really want us all to understand the gravity of the issue with plastic-based period products, not only with regards to the impact on the environment, but also our health. So here are a few stats that I wanted to share because we all know I love a statistic. So tampon usage. On average, a person who menstruates may use between 11,000 and 16,000 tampons in their lifetime. Pads and liners, between 12 and 15,000 pads and liners in your menstruating years. That is wild. The environmental impact. Traditional disposable menstrual products are estimated to take hundreds of years to decompose, contributing significantly to landfill waste. Plastic content. So I don't think people realise how much plastic actually goes into sanitary products. Many commercial menstrual products, including tampon applicators and pad backings, contain plastic, further adding to the environmental burden. Global scale. So globally, it's estimated that 200,000 tonnes of menstrual product waste is generated annually. Marine pollution. Improper disposal of menstrual products can contribute to marine pollution. And a lot of studies have shown that plastic applicators and wrappers on shorelines of the oceans. And a former guest and friend of Sustainably Influenced, Ella Daish, back in season two, spoke to us about ending period plastic and has been working to make this happen since. So there is also a health impact in this. So some commercial tampons and sanitary products are made from bleached materials linked to various health concerns. And while the levels in menstrual products are generally low, I have to be honest, they are generally low, the repeated and prolonged exposure over a person's menstruating years can really raise questions about potential health implications. Choosing unbleached or organic alternatives is one way individuals seek to minimise the potential risk. The urgency for innovation in the menstrual product space is further compounded by a climate crisis, which has elevated environmental concerns to critical level. Traditional disposable menstrual products contribute significantly to waste and pollution. Let's all just be really honest about it. And that kind of exacerbates the environmental challenge posed by the changing climate. As the global community grapples with the repercussions of climate change, there's a really pressing need for sustainable alternatives in menstrual care in order to mitigate the environmental impact and contribute to a much healthier planet and hopefully have us reach our goals by 2030. The intersection of waste reduction, health-conscious formulations and climate crisis intensifies the demand for innovative solutions in the menstrual product industry and pushing for a paradigm shift towards products that are both eco-friendly and conducive to our well-being. So today I am speaking with one of the co-founders of Floos, the world's first biodegradable pad, Dr. Olivia Ahn. And let's just say I get really excited in this conversation. So let's get into it.
Most of my followers and listeners will know that I am the period underwear girl, and I am always harping on about zero waste options and reusable period products. And so speaking to you is a huge, huge honor for me. Olivia, let's kind of get started straight into it. Floose is the first, I think, first that I've heard of, I should say, period product to develop zero waste, biodegradable and flushable period pads. So considering the environmental impact of traditional menstrual products, what was the inspiration behind this brand?
Oh, thank you so much for such a warm welcome, Bianca. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. And thank you so much for letting me speak about sustainability and period care. I often get looks of apprehension when I excitedly tell them that this is something I'm passionate about. So I'm thrilled to meet another person who's passionate about this. Floose is the world's first fully flushable period pads. And as part of that, in order to be flushable, we are fully landfill free, microplastic free, and as you said, biodegradable. So my personal mission that triggered this work really stems from a raging indignation, as I really want to lessen the impact of climate crisis on women. But talking about it in general on people, the burden of waste has been forced onto consumer shoulders, which causes a great deal of confusion that I think we're all acutely familiar with. You're standing above a bin trying to read the labels on the back of a yogurt pot or a crisp packet and thinking, do I wash this? Do I put this into the mixed or dry recycling, or can I go into the general? And so we are also burdened with the guilt of raising the next generation without the solution to the growing climate crisis. We're standing in front of shelves at the supermarket, desperately searching for product claims and hoping that we can believe them. And on top of that, we're coupled with the stress of everyday living, of the fast-paced modern-day living. But narrowing down specifically to the users, so to period care users, gender inequality coupled with climate crisis is one of the greatest challenges of our time. It poses threats to ways of life, livelihood, health and safety, security for girls, women across the world. And I found that historically, climate change scientists, researchers, and policymakers have really struggled with how to make those vital connections between gender, social equity, and climate change. So I think as the data comes out, there's more and more clear correlation. We need to talk about the disparate actions and the impacts of climate change on women and their empowerment and therefore effective global action. One thing that I'm really keen to note is that climate change is a threat multiplier. So it escalates anything in a social, political, economic tensions in an already fragile and conflict-affected settings. However, in spite of their vulnerability, women are not only seen as victims of climate change, but they are one of the most effective and active agents and promoters to be able to combat that. So this uniquely gives us an opportunity. That intersectionality between gender inequality and climate crisis, requiring that collective action to address the products driving that permanent waste, which is something, is the reason why I started Planera and Floose, the company that you see today. I really wanted to create a company that took back the responsibility of sustainability from the consumer. Manufacturers and distributors need to take ownership of the products that they really sell and put on people's shelves, because in both in terms of impact on people and the planet, we need to really stop putting that burden on the individual consumer. And as the corporate and as the, you know, general organizations really start to appreciate that we are the ones who are able to take the most change to be able to drive that. So that's how Floose was born.
It's super interesting. I think not many people would think that it's possible to have a fully zero waste, biodegradable, flushable product. One of the top rated, well, I'll say top listened to episodes of Sustainably Influenced is one where when my former co-host was still part of the podcast, Charlotte, she wanted to talk about things you can't flush down the loo, and some of the stats around menstrual products that are flushed down the toilet is just astonishing, that people think that standard plastic-based products can go down the loo. It's still wild to me. And when we were talking about things like fatbergs, people were just saying, this is so gross, but it's so interesting. So I think it's that kind of mindset where you're coming away from that and being able to use a product that has literally no impact essentially. It's just, you don't have to worry. It takes away that eco anxiety that I'm sure so many of us feel as people who have periods. It's a lot. There's already enough pressure. There's the pink tax. There's all these other things involved. And to be able to do this and just take away one little facet of that worry and that anxiety is just amazing. So thank you. I kind of want you to elaborate a little bit on the innovation and some of the key features of Floos period pads that set them apart from conventional options, particularly in terms of that zero waste aspect and that flushability.
So the zero waste aspect was really important to me. And I started to think about where you were. So everything that you hold in your hand, from the pouch, the release paper, the pad, everything is fully flushable, fully biodegradable, microplastic free. So you can literally leave a toilet stall with nothing in your hand. Now, the zero waste part, how does the pad actually break down? So the hydraulic action of the flush, so that when you flush the pad, it essentially rips the layers of the pad apart. And as it travels down the pipes within a few minutes, similar to when you shake a snow globe, you're going to get tiny slurry of 3 millimeter long cellulosic chains, so plant fiber chains, that will continually travel their way down to your local water treatment along with the rest of your toilet paper. And when it gets there, it'll sit in a digester along with your rest of the human waste and toilet paper, and fully degrades into just three things. So biogas, which is then captured for renewable energy, biosolids, which are then captured and used for fertilizer and agriculture, and water. So all of that will just be circulated within an already existing and sustainable system. And something that was really important to me was ensuring microplastic free. We see microplastics in every single sanitary product. And we know there is absolutely no debate how plastic has now infiltrated our food ecosystem. By the fact that there are unflushables going down the waterways, I want to ensure that not only are we providing a more sustainable period solutions, but we're also able to prevent plastic from going into our food. So that was something that was absolutely critical for me. So in order to do that, we've had to change not just the materials, but the entire manufacturing process as well.
When I first used them, I was a little bit taken aback because I kept thinking, how are they going to work if they're flushable? I kept thinking, by just the nature of having a period, is that going to make it break down? So I was really concerned. I want to know a little bit about how it manages, how the actual pad itself manages to stay efficient and work properly and be super comfortable while still adhering to those strict environmental standards. Because I think I questioned whether it would be completely biodegradable, because I'm so used to pads that stick onto the gusset having some form of plastic in there, but the glue is completely biodegradable as well, isn't it?
So the glue is made from a derivation of tree sap, actually. So testing, you're absolutely right. It's taken us 7 years to get to that point. We've only just launched this year. And the reason why is because it only took us a few months to create something flushable. But what took us 7 years was creating something that was highly absorbent, comfortable, breathable, and flushable. Because something that I'm absolutely passionate about is you shouldn't have to compromise your performance. And something as critical as a period care product, you need it to make sure that it has that security that you require for that functionality. So how did we do that? I would say there's two main ways that we did that. Firstly, we had an incredible amount of in-house iteration. So we've got about 14,500 product testers that have been with us on the journey. And each trial, we invite about 100 to 250 testers for each product trial. Already this year, for the medium pad, we've done about 4 iterations. We've also been doing some product tests for our liners and heavy pads that are due to drop later coming up. That has been, I would say, the lifeblood, excuse the pun, of our product development. And to even, to further, crucify that pun, I would say that the entire product testing is called launch pad. So the entire reason behind it is we want to work directly with the people who use and need the product, telling us we need the wings to be a slightly different shape, we want it to be a bit more absorbent, we want it to have a drier feel, we want to be able to absorb the pad when I lie on my back more. And so all of these small iterations allowed us to be absolutely confident that this is something that we've got a process where we can have this great feedback. And I'm not to say that we're done. We're continually doing these product tests. And so if you go to our website and sign up, you can tell us about what are the additional changes you want seen in our products. We want to hear from you. The other thing is, it's not just about our in-house validation. We want to ensure that we get the external sort of skin certifications to make sure that these new materials and products that we're bringing into the market are actually going to be better for your skin. So we use the same testing laboratory as Lush, you know, the skincare shop. And the great thing about it is they're a completely vegan testing lab. So they actually do stem cell growth within the lab. So everything is in an in vitro sort of situation. But we do our testing on skin irritation. So what happens when the pad is directly put on your skin, as well as vaginal irritation. And then we also test for skin sensitization. So over repeated exposure over time, how does the product interact with your skin? And of course, we pass the fine colors with all of those certifications. So this is something that I'm highly confident and take a huge amount of sort of care ensuring, because we know that it's such a private part of your body.
I think that's another thing. For years, people didn't realize that you've got these bleached, plastic, toxic things on such an intimate part of your body. And there are insertables as well, when you think about like tampons and things like that. And even I didn't know this until I started to explore my own journey with sustainability and to learn more. And I always worried about the plastic element of things. And I think we've spoken about the fact that it is microplastic free, but microplastics are in so many hygiene products, like ridiculous amounts of it as well, and especially menstrual products. But how did you manage to address that when developing this for like a microplastic free alternative that does all of these other amazing things?
It's a personal sticking point for me as well, because it's the environmental concern about these microplastics. But the more and more we read about PFAS, these forever chemicals, and we don't know the impact of PFAS and microplastics on the human body. And so this is it's an intrinsic sort of care point as well. So in order for us to address that microplastics, for us, it was always a prerequisite from the beginning. It was a completely red line that we absolutely had to do as a product. So we addressed it in two ways. First, in the materials themselves. So we replaced all of the materials, including the backing sheet that, you know, is typically non-breathable PLA or PET. We replaced that with you would have felt it when you had it. It feels like a material, right? It's like a non-woven. And we replaced the super absorbent polymer in the middle. So usually each of those grain sizes will swell up and you can't flush those because that would just create havoc in the waterways. We replaced all of the materials within the products, but the issue remained is that the way that all menstrual products are created, all menstrual pads are created in the market, is they use a hot melt acrylic-based adhesive to glue all of these materials together. So even the biodegradable and organic products, if all of the materials are then bound to each other by a plastic-based glue, then you're not going to allow the full product to degrade. So then we had to understand and develop a completely new high-speed microplastic process, because the reason it had to be high-speed is that the industry standard of products usually creates around sort of 600 to about 1,000 pieces per minute. So in order for us to create a product that was going to be commercial and to truly compete against these plastic products, we've got to be able to make it viable in the market. So that's why this manufacturing process was a huge burden of love for the last few years. So we've created, I'm delighted to say, the world's first microplastic-free high-speed line, and that's been patented in 5 territories, so the US, Europe, India, Indonesia, and China. And within there, we use a completely cold glue system, so it is less energy intensive in that way, but it's completely microplastic-free. That in itself was something that's taken us years to perfect, but the brilliant part is it doesn't apply just to pads. It's an absorbent hygiene line. This could go into diapers. This could go into incontinence pads. It can go into many other absorbent hygiene products. And so watch this space as we try to roll this out across the industry.
That's what is so needed, this innovation and somebody to sit there and say, well, this is broken. This is how we fix it. And putting the time in and effort in to make a change. Because I think a lot of companies I hear about or I speak to or brands that I've worked with, they don't have that staying power to be able to make the changes that they need because of the bloody cost of it all, to be totally fair with you, and to not have the manpower. And I think I'm so glad that you've been able to do this. It's really exciting. Moving on slightly, I just want to ask your sort of personal opinion on something. So why is it so essential for those people that still don't quite understand? Why is it so essential for the menstrual product industry to shift towards more sustainable, zero waste options? How are you? Well, I guess you've already explained how you're contributing to this transformation, but why does everybody else need to do this?
So every single year, 280 billion menstrual pads are sold every year. And the fact is that every single one of those pads are used for a few hours, let's say max 12 hours, but every single one of them will stick around for over 500 years. So there's a bit of a paradox. If you call them disposable pads, they really should be disposable. But I think the more accurate way of describing these products that we're using in the market today is we're just moving them. We're moving them from your bin, we're moving them to the landfill. And the impact doesn't just stop there. We're obviously creating, they're taking up the physical space in the landfill, but they'll continue to leach out greenhouse gases, microplastics. They will continue to have toxic impacts on the aquatic life and environment. So what needs to happen is we need to right this imbalance. Our rate of degradation and disposal needs to match the rate of our consumption. And if we're consuming 280 billion pads a year, we need to be able to meet that. The other thing that I would like to raise is that we also shouldn't be looking at forcing new and unwanted behaviors on customers. I'm absolutely a full proponent of reusability, but it hasn't taken, like, with still 280 billion pads, there's a huge sort of need that needs to be met in the market. We ran a study earlier this year in April with 2,000 respondents. And learned that 37% of people in the UK still have flushed a period product within the last 12 months. So over a third of people have flushed. And of those that flush, 52% of them do it every single month. So there's a clear difference between what we're talking about in a public discourse when you know you are able to be held accountable for what you talk about and what you say. But in the privacy of your bathroom stall, obviously the behaviors that are exhibited are very different. So we can't control their behavior when they're in the privacy. So what we need to do is lean into that behavior and actually reward them for that by giving them a sustainable route and a disposal way for doing that. And since the customer and the consumer can't control the products that they choose on the shelves, the industry must take collective action to create the products with that complete cradle to grave cycle in mind of product. Often the calculation for carbon can stop at the factory gate, which really means, and it's very understandable why then you're getting able to talk about these product claims about, you know, X percentage off of carbon, because you're only calculating the beginning of life. But if it takes, I don't know, let's say a few months from sourcing of the product to use, and then you have 500 years after it in a landfill, we need to take the end of life into consideration. So that's why I think it's essential for the industry to shift.
Just because you've thrown something away, it doesn't mean it's gone anywhere. It's still in existence. It doesn't suddenly disappear into the ether and disintegrate just because you finished using it. It has all been dumped somewhere. I think waste is probably the biggest hindrance to us achieving our sustainability goals as a society. I don't want to say for the whole planet, because there are countries that are doing it well, but I'd say most Western societies and a lot of Asia, I'd say as well, we've got so much being produced and it's all just going into these waste piles being dumped in developing countries. And we need to constantly think about that. How do we mitigate that? And I think in a product like this, you can say once it's been used, that's it. It's not an out of sight, out of mind kind of product. You don't have to have that worry or that impact about how you've used something. I'm really passionate about this. So moving on to our very final question, which I'm kind of gutted about. I know what we're going to talk about for this, and I'm really glad that we're going to talk about this, but I want to just talk about some of the challenges that you've encountered in developing a product like this and bringing it to market. And it taking, 7 years, you said, to create something that's such an innovation in its industry, plus developing a supply chain, a whole new way to create the product. How do you foresee them influencing broader industry practices in the future? And can you tell us a little bit about those challenges that you have experienced?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would categorize the challenges into two main areas. First one has, I would say, broadly around communication. So with a new product, a flushable menstrual pad, we have to do a huge amount of communication by bringing this to market on how to use it, expectations, reassurance. And as part of that, regulations is a big part of that communication. I have seen how regulations can cause confusion when they are delayed and sort of trailing behind a commercial innovation. So, for example, flushable wipes, there was a huge amount of confusion with that. I am really passionate about protecting the term flushable. I would equate this to the term vegan. And you can't use the term vegan anywhere on your product unless you've gone through a huge amount of series of testings. And there is a trust, there's consumer trust with a vegan certification. There isn't that same amount that I see with the flushability regulation and certification. So I am passionate about working with water companies, regulatory bodies, in order to bring that trust to the consumer, because that is one way of protecting our waterways, is making a clear distinction between flushables and unflushables and regulating the communication around that. I also think another point within the communication, I think definitions, and this is a much wider topic, but that really struggles. I've highlighted how do we term disposable, but also what does flushable mean? What does sustainable mean? I know that there are certain common accepted definitions, but I think it would really, really help to provide a clear set of acceptable international nomenclature where we're able to talk from the same sort of definition sheet. So that all sort of comes under that communication challenge. The next challenge that I would see within this industry is price point. Often sustainability and is hand in hand with being able to have the privilege to afford them. And I completely accept that right now, within our first year of launch, we are more expensive than other products. So we are sitting around the middle of other sort of biodegradable and organic products that you can buy online. But where I really want to be is the same price point as your average plastic pad that sits on your shelves. And there are two main things that impacts that. First is the cost of the bill of materials. The cost of the materials themselves is much more expensive. That's not on the consumer, that's on me to be able to manage and try to, you know, source wide and bring many avenues of that source in so that we are able to bring that cost down. The second point as well is also the manufacturing process and the conversion processes. Typically, a lot of these processes using these materials have been built on PET, PLA, on plastic materials. And so you get more homogeneous materials when you use natural materials, according to the seasonality of it, according to what's happening, you get more heterogeneity. So within that point, it costs more to manage these materials. So that's, I think, for the wider collective industry to sort of put our heads together and work to be able to bring those costs down. But for, I'm thrilled to say that from the beginning of this year, we've managed to bring the cost of our materials down as well. I'm really looking forward to making sustainability affordable and accessible to the wider public. I don't believe that sustainable choices should be a privilege. It really should be something that is accessible to everyone. So that is something that I'm working really hard on. And I aim by that 2026, I aim to be close to the price point of an Always Ultra pad that you get on the Tesco shelf. So watch this space.
Wow. Okay. I have to say, doing this recording really got me overexcited. And I'm laughing to myself because I'm so grateful that we don't record the guest interviews or videos, because my arms were flying about all over the place. And we had such a good chat. Olivia and I could have spoken for maybe like 2-3 hours, and it was getting close to running over time. Please, please, please make sure that you try Floose this year. And if you are someone who uses pads, such an incredible team like them need our support to make sure that funding goes towards creating exciting waste solutions just like Floose. If you want to find out more about Floose, they are linked in the show notes, and I've also linked to a piece of content that I released with them earlier this year educating you all about disposable, biodegradable period pads. I will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Until then, you can subscribe and listen back to previous episodes of Sustainably Influenced on all good podcast platforms. You can follow at Sustainably Influenced on Instagram and TikTok. This season of Sustainably Influenced was produced by Content is Queen, sound editor Amber Miller, and presented by Bianca Foley.